And my guest this morning is world champion freediver William Troubridge. He's held the world record 15 times. He was the first person to break the 100-meter barrier unassisted, truly dominating his sport. To set these world records, William Troubridge has the ability to hold his breath for about 8 minutes underwater, pushing his body physically, but perhaps even more so mentally. He's just published an incredible memoir titled Oxygen, and he joins us from the Bahamas, where he currently lives near Dean's Blue Hole. Kia ora, good morning, William.
Good morning, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. Congratulations on your book. I want to get to some of the detail in the book in just a minute, but I thought I should start off by asking properly how you are going, because I'm right, I think, in thinking you've just had your first case of the bends.
I did, yeah. I'm actually a lot better now. I'm almost back to 100%. It was only one leg, and it was basically just numbness. The leg still worked fine. I just couldn't feel the skin.
Right.
And that slowly came back with hyperbaric chamber treatment. And now it's almost unnoticeable.
So what actually happened? You were just participating in one of your fairly regular training routines.
Yeah, it was a pretty tame training session, to be honest. Only 5 dives to 40 meters. The contributing factors would have been the ascent speed, so I was coming up with a monofin and moving fairly quickly, and the time between dives, which was only about just over 2 minutes. But it's a table that I've done many, many times before, so it's still kind of perplexing that it gave me DCS on this occasion.
Yeah, pretty scary, I would have thought. And there will be listeners who thought you could only get the bends if you're actually inhaling oxygen once you're underwater, but that isn't the case.
No, it's more difficult to get it from freediving, but it is possible because we only have that one breath of air we take on the surface, but that still does have 80% nitrogen. And so if you go deep and deep enough and long enough, then you absorb some of that into your blood, and if you don't spend long enough on the surface, then it accumulates over dives, and then on the last dive, in this case, on the way up, the concentration of nitrogen was such that it formed bubbles on the ascent, and those bubbles go and lodge themselves in capillaries in the brain and do damage that way.
Oh, it sounds really scary, but you're all pretty much okay now after some serious sessions in the hyperbaric chamber. Do you have one relatively close?
I actually had to be flown to Nassau, another island here, and they can't use a regular plane because it has to be at sea level. Otherwise, if you go up to altitude, it can make it worse. So they had to fly a special plane across to pick me up. But it's all covered by diving insurance, luckily, with Dan.
Wow. Yeah, it's an experience. I hope that things are okay. Can you tell us a bit about your life living in the Caribbean? It must be, I mean, it sounds very glamorous, but I suppose your life is one of almost unending discipline.
It can be, yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful island, and it's warm and tropical, and the water is amazing. But at the same time, when I'm here, I'm always training, and it also is a little isolated. It's not one of the most trafficked islands by tourism. So it can be in the kind of off-season when there aren't too many other athletes here, it can be lonely. And I miss living in New Zealand, but unfortunately in New Zealand, the waters are amazing and wild and beautiful, but not conducive to the kind of training that I need to do because it's so cold and you have issues with current and waves and all that jazz. So I'm kind of bound to be in places like this in order to be able to train. But, I mean, I'm not complaining. It's a beautiful island.
For those who are unfamiliar with Dean's Blue Hole itself, just to give us a bit of background, it's in the Bahamas and it is essentially a massive sinkhole. Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. It's kind of eerie to look at, especially from above, because it's in the corner of a lagoon, like an idyllic Caribbean lagoon, and there's just this hole, kind of like if you imagine the Sarlacc pit from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Just the sand slopes down on a steep angle and then drops away. It's actually undercut, so it opens out into this massive chamber. And that descends down to 203 meters. So I'm really only going about halfway into it.
Wow, it's the perfect location to train for what you do. As you say, the currents aren't too much of an issue. The water is very warm. But you grew up around the water, didn't you?
Yeah, as a kid, we sailed on a boat from England to New Zealand over the course of 4 or 5 years. And I arrived in New Zealand when I was just over 5 years old. So I set sail when I was just a little baby and kind of grew up on the boat, always snorkeling, always in the water in the Pacific. So that's kind of where I guess this passion or this urge to be underwater came from.
Did you do a lot of spearfishing and that sort of thing when you were a kid?
A little bit, yeah. Later, we carried on living on the boat in New Zealand until I was 10, and in those later years, we were in the Bay of Islands, and David, my father, used to take me and my brother Sam off to spearfish, and when I was about 9 or 10, he'd load the gun for me and let me shoot the fish, so that was a cool experience.
Yeah.
More recently, yeah, spear fishing is a great way. It's like a sustainable, ecological way of getting fish for the table.
Yeah. What is it specifically that attracted you to competitive freediving? Because I can imagine, having only watched the sport from the outside, that it is a particularly and uniquely challenging sport from a mental perspective.
That's kind of the key for it for me, because it's not just the mental challenge, but also a physical challenge, obviously. And so something that kind of challenges everything that I have. And in the past, when I played chess, for example, that's a purely mental challenge. But physically, I was kind of, I had all this nervous physical energy, which wasn't being, didn't have an outlet. And the same with sports. At university, I rowed, which is beautiful to be on the water, but mostly physical, and so I kind of felt my mind languishing a little bit, whereas this sport, when I found it, was the perfect combination of both, because it does require you to be mentally focused as well as physically trained.
There's a line in the book where you say, after all, it's up to you and you alone, and I think that's one of the potentially attractive and scary things about freediving, in that it's you, yourself, and nature, and it's a very raw pursuit. I mean, you can't get a much simpler sport.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of another appeal of it for me. And basically, like at 100 metres, it's only you down there. You don't have anyone who can coach you or give you advice or help you out, so you are completely reliant on yourself. And I think that's perhaps why it's a sport that has appealed to a lot of Kiwis like myself and others. It's kind of taking off in New Zealand. It's favored by someone who has that kind of individual start, who's capable of providing for themselves and who wants to meet a challenge head on for themselves. And the kind of spirit, the adventure spirit of people like Sir Edmund Hillary or Sir Peter Blake, those kind of explorers. Freediving is an explorative sport where you're discovering your own limits, your own potential.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch. I'm sure it's beautiful to participate in and to excel in, but it doesn't come without sacrifices. And in the book, you detailed your training. It's hardly surprising that it's as brutal as it is. You've had to give up alcohol, caffeine, sugar, salt, even. So you live a pretty clean life.
Yeah, some of those were more difficult than others. So I actually lost my sense of taste for salt, sour, sweet and bitter, which isn't as bad as it sounds. It happened when I was prescribed some kind of dodgy medicine in Egypt to try and get over a cold more quickly. And so now I don't taste salt or sour, sweet or bitter. Even before that, I'd actually stopped eating sweet, like sugary foods, because they have very little nutritional value. And I wasn't drinking caffeine because of the detrimental effects it has on training. So it really didn't, I didn't sense the lack that much, because I was so kind of focused and driven on my objectives. When I do set a world record or have a good competition, then I kind of allow myself a few days after that to break free of those rules and discipline for a
swim. Yeah. Another part of your preparations and training is yoga, and I think it was perhaps first pioneered in freediving by the French diver Jacques Mayol. How important is yoga for breath control and heart control in freediving?
Yes, yeah, it's not. I mean, you don't have to do yoga to be a freediver, but it definitely does help. So a lot of the exercises that work towards slowing your breathing down and breathing maybe once or twice a minute with really long exhales and inhales, those same exercises will develop the capacities and the composure that you need to be able to hold your breath for longer under the water.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely goes hand in hand with the sport and has for a long time.
Do you ever have self-doubt, William?
Yeah, of course. I think we all do from time to time. And it's kind of important to notice whether that self-doubt is just those kind of gremlin thoughts that pop up from now and again, or if it is actually a case of something is wrong and you need to address it. And so that's kind of the difficult step. If you realize it's just a random fear or a negative thought, then it's easier to dispel. But when something has gone wrong, then you need to kind of get to the bottom of it and address that issue.
Because it is obviously not a sport without its inherent risks and dangers. And in the book, you describe what is clearly a very affecting moment in your life. Your friend and fellow diver, Nick Mavoli, failed to regain consciousness after a dive and passed away. How did that event in 2013 affect you and affect your mental state as you continued diving and you continued to pursue world records?
Yeah, it definitely hit hard, both for myself and the whole kind of freediving community, really, because Nick was such a loved freediver and a really strong competitor. But the thing that kind of made us realize more than anything else was that we had been getting kind of complacent towards low-grade injuries to the lungs that were happening in competitors. So if you aren't completely adapted to the pressure and you go a little too deep for what your lungs and your airways can tolerate, then you injure the lining of your trachea, your bronchi, and your alveoli in your lungs, and over time those injuries accumulate. And in his case, it was pretty much just the straw that broke the camel's back. So that last dive did too much injury on top of what had happened before, and he wasn't able to recover from it. So we've completely changed our kind of attitude towards those injuries now, and there's a lot more medical protocols in place, as well as like different approaches within training and the athletes themselves.
Yeah. How deep do you want to go, William?
It's not really so much about the number as about trying just to realize my own potential underwater, whatever that is. And if I kind of train as hard as I can and prepare as well as I can, and on the day do as good a dive as I can, then whatever that number is will be my potential.
Yeah.
But kind of thinking of a number in advance doesn't help the process, because it then creates kind of psychological blocks down the line. So it's better just to focus on the process. And
do you think achieving that goal, whatever it might be, is the sort of thing that would get you excited? Because I've got to say, you always come across as a supremely zen dude, and I wondered if there was anything in life, be it rock and roll music, gangster rap, a nice hot coffee on a Sunday morning, anything that gets you really excited, that really lifts the William Troubridge heart rate.
There's plenty. I mean, if you see some of the videos at the end of my dives, I'm pretty stoked at having made it. And it does get me excited when I break a record, or even in training when I do a good dive that I'm really happy with. It doesn't have to be a PB or a world record, just something that goes really well. But on top of that, I mean, I can get the same kind of thrill through just everyday experiences or diving to 10 meters rather than 100 meters. So maybe I don't express it on the outside, but yeah, I'm definitely excited by what I'm doing.
It's a real congratulations on all of your success so far. We can't wait to see what else you achieve in this incredible sport. And congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much. Cheers.